be clear. And I think we forget that. I think it's a great piece of advice to everybody all the time. Decide with a lot less debate, a lot less bullshit. Go. Mm. Come, go, stay, get on the train, fly.
Hello, my name's Steve Wasserman, bringing you another Read Me Something You Love, in which you read, I listen, and then we have a little chat. It's cozy in that way. Today, I've got one of my podcast heroes reading one of his literary heroes. It's the writer and performer Ryan Van Winkle, who does the Scottish Poetry Library podcast, which is one of my all-time favourite online treats. And he's going to be sharing with us a poem by Michael Burkhart called Tooth, which we'll be chewing on after his reading. No more bad puns, I promise. Take it away, Mr. Van W.
Tooth. You did not die because of a tooth. Not my tooth, or your tooth, or your mother's tooth, or the teeth of the neighborhood either. The neighborhood did have teeth, or the mathematical tooth of the government sending you off to another war, or the tooth of money which you said once you wanted to have implanted in your brain. Whenever we made out in the car, she was sexually, erotically at ease, and this other side of her came wildly around. She wanted me like a child wants a dollar, like a lost son later wants rain, like a lost tooth wants the mouth again, or the root again. And the mouth knows this too, and wants this belonging back, this history back. You need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit. One time she called me by another date, another name. We were deep inside each other, and she just moaned out this other name. I didn't say anything about it for a long time. Maybe because I had done this too, other times, other people, once or twice, and it was a rare or slightly rare time where some part of me must have been willing to say to myself, she is fucking human. Give her that. So she says another name. So what? But one time my hand was at her throat. One time she wanted to die upside down. She felt so bad for her own life. Inarticulate place where the unfolding simply keeps going. There's no turning back. The tears are in the throat and the teeth as well as the eyes. The neighborhood could be called out to a fire. It hurts that bad. There is smoke for life's misery, and it's going to pass, and it's going into hiding again. For a while, or quite a while.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So that, I mean, that was a pretty... That reading felt quite relentless. If, you know, is that how the poem feels to you? That it sort of seems to have this kind of cumulative...
That rhythm of it
energy,
building up.
Building,
every time I read it, I can't help it. I don't know. Did it not do that? I guess it's a drive, and it just keeps going. And I got it the other day when I was reading it. I don't know if you can tell, but this is a pretty yellowed piece of photocopied paper. I keep this right next to my toilet. You know, on the wall, not. And I read it quite frequently, actually. And I was just reading it the other day, and I got it. It's the unfolding, the inarticulate place where the unfolding simply keeps going. And I think that's what the poem does. It just unfolds and unfolds and unfolds upon itself.
What is it unfolding to, do you think?
Good question. Everything. I think it comes down to that. I think it comes down to that line, there's smoke for life's misery, and it's going to pass, and it's going into hiding again for a while, or quite a while. And I think that's, if there's a key in there, I think that might be one of them. I think it's the unfolding that leads to acceptance of the misery, I guess. I find it a very... I mean, I get the tingles when I read it. The other day I read it aloud in preparation for this, I was quite sad. I teared up. Like, it's a really, like... It's loss, and it's this poor woman who wanted to die upside down because she felt so bad for her own life. Inarticulate place like that, like, we don't know what it is, do we? You know, but it's just that malaise, I guess. what the hell the tooth is doing there, the mathematical tooth. I don't know, but I love it.
I mean, going back to the first line, an incredible first line, you did not die because of a tooth. I mean, if somebody says to me, you or she or he didn't die because of X, doesn't it make you kind of want to go, I bet that's exactly what she died of. You know, well, she didn't die of arsenic. Of course she died of arsenic. But how does one, if that's the case, how does one die of a tooth? Anyway.
A really infected wisdom tooth.
Okay.
Hey, it's my only answer. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what is it? What does the tooth mean? You know, what is the tooth?
Yeah.
There's a lot of teeth in there.
And all presented in quite, again, strangely sort of, they seem logical, but strangely logical ways. So, for example, the teeth of the neighborhood.
The neighborhood did have teeth. The neighborhood did. And you can see that as soon as you said the teeth of the neighborhood. And I love how he does that shift of like, the neighborhood did have teeth.
Mm.
Yeah, of course the neighbor had the teeth. Gossipers, gossip mongering, uh-huh. You know, or just sharp, mean. We've all lived in a mean uh-huh. neighborhood. It's a mean neighborhood, I feel like. Yeah.
So I tend to envision suburbia. Because we talk of wagging tongues, don't we?
Mm.
But I suppose the teeth, it makes it more vicious. It makes it...
Yeah, super vicious. Or the neighborhood wouldn't let go. Maybe you're trying to get out of the neighborhood in a bad place. You're trying to get out. I mean, I think it has a lot of connotations, none of which... none of which I'd want to put a finger on.
And the mathematical tooth?
Yeah, I think the mathematical tooth is this... the relentless logic of it. And the bureaucracy of the government. And then this notion of sending you off to another war. Yeah, I mean, we've all got another war to fight. And whether or not that's like the Dole office or a literal war or, you know, the place where you have to get your disability checks or your whatever.
And
the war sort of
eats up young men and now young women as well. So, I mean, it does, the war kind of consumes people.
Yeah, that's good. You did not die because of a tooth. Not my tooth, or your tooth, or your mother's tooth, or the teeth of the neighborhood either. The neighborhood did have teeth, or the mathematical tooth of the government sending you off to another war, or the tooth of money which you said once you wanted to have implanted in your brain.
So you've got all these teeth in the first stanza. And then suddenly you're in the car and they're having sex. And then you get these, again, very curious, more sort of analogies, but quite strange analogies. So, she wanted me like a child wants a dollar, okay? Like a lost son later wants rain. What's that about?
I don't know. It's my absolute favorite, though. I mean, this is maybe going to be so frustrating for your listeners. You know, I tried to interview Michael Burkhard, because he's an old professor of mine.
Right.
And... he lives up in Syracuse, last I heard. Maybe you'll listen to this and be furious with me for doing it. And I really just wanted to sit with him and talk to him about this stuff. I don't know. I love it. Like a lost son later wants rain. I don't know. You know, like you can see it, right? You can see the small boy out in the rain wanting the rain. Lost son, she wanted me like a child wants a dollar, like a lost son later wants rain, like a lost tooth wants the mouth again, or the root again, and the mouth knows this too, and wants this belonging back, this history back. You need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit.
But I mean, this is S-O-N, but of course, it, in a way, it makes more literal sense if it was S-U-N.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
The lost son.
Michael's a big fan of the typo, from what I remember.
Right.
Really big fan of the typo and the miswritten. Keep them, you know, he was always like, yeah, it's a very, very interesting typo. Keep that, you know, when we were doing workshops together. So... He could have easily written son and decided son was S-O-N was better. The idea of the lost son wanting rain, the idea of somebody who's orphaned or just lost or confused, maybe stuck in the rain, and maybe you want that feeling back again. Maybe you want that feeling of being lost and in the rain again. Maybe you enjoy that kind of misery. Maybe you enjoy that fear. Maybe you enjoy that. Or you know, you can be nostalgic for things that weren't pleasant. You can be nostalgic for times in your life that were not ideal. And then when you get to the next couple of lines, like, I think that's, it always gives me the tingles, like a lost tooth wants the mouth again or the root again. And the mouth knows this too and wants this belonging back, this history back. Wow. I mean, that, you know, that's, you know, like, we've lost our teeth, you know, like our baby teeth or whatever. You know, it comes into nostalgia. It comes to relationships to me. Like, you know, that feeling of losing a partner, of losing a love, you know, you want that belonging back, don't you? You want that bed, and you want that kitchen, and I've felt like a lost son who wanted rain. Yeah, I know what that means in my heart. I don't know what it means to articulate, but maybe I've done some to it. What, listeners, what do you think? That's what I want to say. I wish this was a call-in program.
I mean, because it's interesting, because when you make these analogies, it seems like also the poet is almost wanting us to be having this discussion, because he then says, to end that stanza, you know, you need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit, which is essentially what, you know, I mean, we're debating in some way, but you're also, you know, you're not doing bullshit. Doesn't sound particularly bullshitty. So, you know, maybe you're giving Burcott what he's sort of asking for there at the end.
I hope so. I'd give him anything he wants, man. I know, I think you have to come to some of these poems with a bit of openness, and an openness not to understand, and an openness to invest yourself in it. And I come at it, you know, very much from my own point of view. I mean, I think I read this poem the first time going through a pretty lousy breakup. I read it a few nights ago going through a pretty lousy breakup, and I always connect it to that. And I think, you know, when I get to the line, you need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit, I think he's saying to somebody, you know, get off the fence, which way are you going to go, you know, we do need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit. You need, sometimes you just need to be clear, and I think we forget that. I think it's a great piece of advice to everybody all the time. Decide with a lot less debate, a lot less bullshit. Go. Mm. Come, go, stay, get on the train, fly. I didn't say anything about it for a long time, maybe because I had done this too other times, other people, once or twice, and it was a rare or slightly rare time where some part of me must have been willing to say to myself, she is fucking human. Yeah. Give her that. And I love that line break. At she is fucking, like, and yeah. I think that's, I think Burcard does that beautifully. I think through the whole poem, I mean, the enjambment throughout it is really good, and it does that thing where you're in two places at once, you know, throughout the whole thing, and that's something I just
I love that line as well. What are the two places you're suddenly, the two sort of roots that are suddenly presented when you read? You know, I say to myself, she is fucking human, give her that. I mean, where are the two places that goes, do you think?
Because for a minute you're in the present, right? She is fucking, physically fucking. You know, you're fucking this woman. And then that, from such a base, visceral thing, to have the softness of the humanity come in. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's fucking human. And then I guess if you read it a different way, and your brain is going a bit faster than the thing, you know, she is fucking crazy, she is fucking beautiful, right. She is fucking blah blah blah, boom boom, she's fucking,
fucking human, as in she's prone to as well.
She's prone
just
to she's
just
got
like
air.
We we do, and yeah.
But for a little bit, you know, it's almost like he's saying, well, you know, it was a rare, slightly rare time where part of me was willing to say, like, just enjoy the fucking of it. You know,
right.
You need to decide with a lot less debate, less bullshit, man.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about it so much. you know, so she calls out another date, another name. You know, so there's all that going on. I don't know. Yeah, that to me is part of the magic stuff of poetry. You know, like that ability to be in those two places at once and have those two synapses firing. And it happens to me every time I read the poem. Every time I've read the poem, it catches me out in one way or another on one of those lines. I forget actually where it's going, and I'm just so caught up in the moment. I always, always forget what's coming next, and I just think it does it so well. It really charms me.
Mm. But when we get to the final stanza, this is where I get lost in a good way.
Good. But one time my hand was at her throat. One time she wanted to die upside down. She felt so bad for her own life. Inarticulate place where the unfolding simply keeps going. There's no turning back. The tears are in the throat and the teeth as well as the eyes. The neighborhood could be called out to a fire. It hurts that bad. There is smoke for life's misery, and it's going to pass, and it's going into hiding again. For a while, or quite a while.
There is smoke for life's misery, and it's going to pass, and it's going into hiding again for a while, or quite a while. What is the it about there, do you think?
You mean this it?
Well, what is going into hiding at the end of the poem?
Oh, it is going to pass. There is smoke. I mean, I guess literally based on the context of the thing, it's the smoke is going to pass. But I would imagine. I think it's.
And the smoke? What is the smoke? I mean, is the smoke the.
I don't know. I was wondering this. What does it mean to have smoke for life's misery? Do you know? Is that a phrase you've ever heard before?
I mean, the phrase it kind of calls up is there's no smoke without a fire.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's connected in some way to that. So the fire is the misery and the smoke is the poem?
Yeah. Possibly. I think so. I mean, I think that's a good enough.
There is smoke for life's misery. There are poems for these sort of almost impossible feelings we have.
Bad inarticulate feelings that we have. There is smoke for the fire. There is the fire eventually dies. The smoke passes and it goes away for a while or quite a while, and then it comes back. I mean, there's this definite awareness that it's going to come back. I love that bit. You know, it's going into hiding again for a while or quite a while. Not even sure for how long. You know, and so I think it is. You know, to me when I read it, I think it is the misery that it is going to pass. And it's just that phrase, right? It's going to pass. Right. It's going to pass. It's what everybody tells you when you're going through a rough patch. It's gonna pass. It's gonna be passed. It's fine. Everything will be. You'll get your job. You'll get a job. Okay. You'll get another job. Yep. You know, whatever. And so that's the emotion I get from it is that it's going to pass. And then connected to the misery and smoke. Then yeah, I think that's it. And then of course, smoke does pass, right? It wafts. It goes away. The whole neighborhood's been called out to look at this thing. It's been so, you know, I mean, it gets really crazy, right? The throat and the tears are in the throat and the teeth as well as the eyes. The tears are in the throat and the teeth as well. I mean, that's of course, yeah, right. I mean, we've cried from our teeth. Sure, I'll give them that. And it's so bad the neighborhood could be called out as if it was a fire. You know, as if there's your house is burning down. The whole neighborhood's
going to
come out.
Which, when you're feeling really bad, you kind of want to call the fire station, don't you?
Yeah, please come out and look. You want everybody to know you're miserable, but you're afraid.
You want to be rescued.
Your house, and you want to be rescued, and yeah, it's deep, man. It's really deep. Really, the poem. Every time I read it, I get really emotional. But yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think the it is, in that it is going into hiding again for a while, or quite a while.
And I mean, teeth are literally deep. People sometimes dream about kind of teeth falling out. It's usually connected to mortal fears, because teeth represent they represent virility and fecundity, and essentially when your teeth start to fall out, that means your time is up.
I have a lot of teeth falling out dreams, and I'm told it's stress.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the other things you mentioned, yeah.
I suppose I kind of also wanted to touch on one of your poems, which, reading from the springboard of Tooth into some of the stuff that you've read, I found History of a Mouth. They're both great poems, and I think the spirit of History of a Mouth, it has that same kind of slightly pervy, in a good way, kind of linguistic spirit behind it. And if you don't mind, do you think we could maybe end with a reading of History of a Mouth?
No, of course.
Could we do that?
Yeah. History of a Mouth. Her mouth was a universe of Polaroids. Her teeth lines I wanted to steal, and there were nights she called my mouth a boulder and said she felt like Jesus. But first, I'd called her legs boulders, and I have opened many things, have struggled from toothless caves, then stepped back in to my father's light. I have opened Christmas presents and phone lines and all the letters I've ever been sent. This is getting off topic, but I like to change topics, like new weather when the old weather gets predictable, less a story than a history, the way Rome was built in there. I want to say that to kiss her is to open her, that her taste of damp lawn is the taste of some secret I buried in the backyard so my brothers could not find it. And I know there are animals with wings which are not birds. I mourn for them. They should be called birds, though they are dinosaurs, flies, mosquitoes, moths, moths drawn so strangely to any kind of light. And I want to believe I am some kind of light at the wing of her dress, careful as a boy not to pull too hard. Curious for this new fabric, and I wonder if moths like men are drawn to the light of distant and already dead stars, if any dream of getting there just to feel that warmth on their milk wings. Do moths have private constellations like we had when we were bright? I named a pattern Clara, and you named one Cassio Bill. And I used to like to cry every morning, and there was a time I could cry every morning, and it seems like many stars fell before this ended, and there were times I liked crying so much I made a movie in my bed, a slow movie, like those of flower buds in bloom, but of me crying and sleeping and crying. And there was another time when I looked, almost by accident, into the world of vermin, to the raccoon, the wharf rat, the skunk grass, and grapes, and there was a time before all these things, when my bed felt like a mouth, a young mouth, where I was the tooth and was caught by the root and had to wiggle, learn how to pull myself free.
And if that didn't scorch your sideburns and set your thighs a-quivering, then nothing will. A big, big thank you to Ryan for stopping over when he was last here in London to record this. He's going to be back in London soon, performing his Red Like Our Room Used to Feel at the South Bank. Tickets possibly still on sale, but probably after a very excited Guardian article last weekend, you might have to just beg, borrow, or steal them. Do also subscribe to the Scottish Poetry Library. It's got some great readings and conversations with up-and-coming and established poets. Until next time, be clear, decide with a lot less debate and bullshit. Come, go, stay, get on the train, fly.